Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 610. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
Hello, Mitchell.
Hi.
Hey, we have not gotten to talk, and I know we both just want to say an enormous congratulations.
Oh, my God.
It to our
so thrilling.
Dear, sweet friend and former co-host of the Queercast and frequent guest, Alexandra Billings.
For the Golden Globe win for Transparent.
Amazing. I mean, Transparent has really just rocked the pop culture, television.
They talked about it today on The View.
In the world, yeah.
Judith Light was on The View today.
I don't know what day it was, whatever day she was on,
talking about it.
This past week, yeah.
It's really amazing, especially when you consider how few people have actually seen Transparent.
Yes, they're coming to actually take us away.
Can you hear that?
The
I wonder if the people can hear that.
Obviously you and I were sitting here watching it together. We both were like weeping.
Sobbing.
When the show won.
I was actually
when
in shock.
Jeffrey
I couldn't
Tambor,
believe it.
You were. You were kind of like, I was sitting there going, I was like having a freaking out moment. And you were just like, oh my God.
I was literally in a state of shock. You know,
and to see Alex on stage. I mean, because she's in the cast, but it felt very specific that they included her on the stage and
yes,
at the main table
as a transgender person.
But she's the only transgender person
that they chose to bring front and center. What I kept thinking was, and this is just my personal story about Alex and I. We lived together for quite a few years, and when we were in between gigs, we were the worst lazy bones.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like during the Chicago winters, when we didn't actually have to leave the house, right? Because we were in between gigs and, you know, you'd have like a week off or something like that, a couple weeks. We would, kid you not, leave the house. We wouldn't get dressed. We looked like crazy people.
Derelict people
with like ripped old pajamas and like holy socks. And so I remember both of us are obsessed with award shows, right? Mm-hmm. We watch them, we talk about them, we discuss them as if they're part of our lives, even though we're both intelligent enough to know that they're silly and probably rigged on some...
Yes, and subjective.
Some sort of Uber level, right? We love them unapologetically. And so I was so freaked out. Oh, and one of the things that we did, I remember this very specifically. One winter, we had like 2 weeks off, both of us, before not the same gig, we both happened to have 2 weeks off, and poor Chrisanne was...
Mm-hmm. Her wife
was working, so we were just home all day, like just stewing in our own funk. And like, we watched every Tony Award on VHS that Alex had taped since she was a kid. Like, who rewatches old award shows?
Yeah.
Including commercials.
Yeah.
It's not like we fast forwarded.
Yeah.
We sat and we watched years worth of Tony Awards that Alex had been taping since the beginning of the VCR.
Yes.
Because we love award shows so much and we were jonesing for it. And we thought, what more?
And this would have been long before YouTube.
Way before YouTube. Right. A lot of these clips are now on YouTube. But Alex had them for years in this embarrassing archive of things that she had taped off the mm-hmm. television. And so I was sort of in shock because I know that my dear friend is mad for award shows.
Right.
And I worried that she could be, that anyone, not she specifically, but that right. anyone could be present.
Yes.
And really take it in. Because it's one thing to be sitting six tables behind Meryl Streep and Helen Mirren. It's another thing to be standing 30 feet in front of
yeah.
on stage while they're staring at you.
Yeah.
And so I talked to Ms. Billings yesterday. We had a really long
oh,
nice
you
chat.
Did?
Yeah. And one of the things that she said was that as she was walking, she had this moment of clarity to shake it off and demand of herself to be present.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said she saw and felt everything.
Mm-hmm.
She saw Meryl Streep. She saw Ethan Hawke. She saw Helen Mirren. She saw it. She felt it. She even sort of pushed herself to the center so that they could see her
mm-hmm.
in this way that is not Alex's MO,
mm-hmm.
right? Alex, while an incredibly charismatic and
dynamic
performer yeah. that we can't take our eyes off, that's, as a person, she's rather shy.
She's rather shy. Yeah. She hates crowds.
Hates crowds and that kind of attention. And so I was really proud of her. So that's the sort of the flip side.
Well, and it's amazing too because like what I was overwhelmed by, not only Jill Soloway and Jeffrey Tambor's speeches, but everything before and after those awards, all of the conversations with the press on the way in and even conversations with the press after they won, Jeffrey Tambor had such generosity
yeah.
to every time that I could find
Me
or
too.
See would at some point when someone asked him a question would take that moment and redirect to Alexandra Billings and introduce Alexandra Billings and
as the actual authority.
As the authority or someone who could actually answer this question. And it really gave Alex a spotlight and a microphone from which to speak yeah. very loudly the trans experience and her experience and share that, you know, where her strength had come from and where her despair and you know, her challenges and her victories through the trans experience. And I thought that was just so generous for somebody who's winning.
Beyond,
I mean, who is a 70-year-old man who has had a career in this, and he has, you know, I'm sure so much of his life wanted to have this, you know, imagine this kind
moment.
Of day for himself and to share
right,
that spotlight.
Because he's never been the leading man.
No.
Right? He was always
I mean, Arrested Development, but,
yeah, but
he wasn't
but
the leading
Bateman
man.
Jason Bateman was the leading
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly.
He was, you know, he's always been the character actor.
Yeah.
And brilliantly so. She and I also discussed the sort of outcry that we've discussed on the show before about people saying, why did they cast a cisgendered man? And we discussed that. We discussed mm-hmm. that a lot. And one of the things that we discussed was that, unfortunately, because of the prejudice, because of the lack of visibility and opportunities for trans actors and actresses, you're going to be hard-pressed to find someone
yeah.
who has had the kind of on stage, on screen, on television, on camera chops
of
that
course.
A Jeffrey Tambor has. And I said to Alex, you know, Alex and I have both been professional actors for a very long time
right.
and I feel pretty confident in my skill set. And I'm like, I don't have his skill set.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the
Never
thing.
Never mind someone
like,
who's been marginalized so much that they haven't even gotten the opportunity.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I think that will be where things will move to or move toward. But I think that, you know, it isn't really realistic that you would have, would have captured the same kind of performance.
I mean, Alex said the same thing I said. Send Jill Soloway three or four people, trans actors or actresses, who are at Jeffrey Tambor's level of acting skill and experience. And I'm sure she would have seen them.
Of course.
I'm sure she would have seen them. But let's be honest and say, if you think you're going to be better than Jeffrey Tambor, I would like you to check your ego at the door.
Right.
You know? And so what I did say to Alex, which I wanted her to sort of pass on to Jill Soloway, was what I think is marvelous, and you and I were just talking about this a little mm-hmm. bit before we sat down to chat publicly, that the repercussions of this show, which has barely been seen
yeah.
because of it being on Amazon Prime, on the attention that it's getting, that the real repercussions, I think, are that Jill and the ABLE cast are presenting conversations that have not been on television or film before. They are next level conversations that we in the community have with each other, with our friends, that maybe even people outside of our community have about gender and sex and sexuality and transition and choice and family and loyalty and fidelity. And but there's such next level conversations happening on this show.
Well, and it's like Norman Lear, you know,
who's been a huge champion.
Who's been a huge champion of the show. I said, you know, there's nothing on television pushing the envelope. Now, he, of course, was, you know, All in the Family and
the Jeffersons.
And the Jeffersons and things that
Good
at the
Times
time
and Maude
were, you know, challenging.
Maude had an abortion.
Yeah, that were doing things that were, you know, theater that, I mean, television that was really engaging and pushing the envelope and really revolutionary. And he said, there's nothing else on television today that's doing it. And, you know, you think, well, today we have so many great shows. We have engaging shows. Yeah. But for him to say, no other show but this show.
No.
Because which is really interesting.
It's the intelligence of the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not simply the subject matter. It's
yeah, it's not that it's shocking, or even though it is.
Right, but it's not
like
that
you
shocking.
And I have been on the show going, what is happening?
I'll tell you what was shocking was that Fakakta Whitney Houston biography that looked more like bad softcore porn.
Yeah.
I mean, the first half hour, 45 minutes of the movie was just these two gorgeous bodies having sex. And it's like, I'm sure Whitney and Bobby had fabulous sex. Is that the story that...
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's the story I needed to be told.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that was more shocking to me, that there was that a movie about Whitney Houston was mostly about her getting it from Bobby Brown.
Well, actually, a movie about Whitney Houston was more about Bobby Brown to me than Whitney Houston, which was really interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if he gets screenwriting credit.
Maybe, perhaps.
Because it feels like it was about him.
Well, I do think that there, you know, is going to be, you know, this is definitely, to me, you know, and I want to talk about this after we do the news and go to the theater here for just a few minutes. But, you know, to me, I think all these topics today that I'm interested in talking about are also connected of like the civil rights movement and where we are today coming off of, you know, last week, Martin Luther King Jr. Day you know, Selma coming out, his birthday, and, you know, and then looking at what's happening with gay rights around marriage. And then, you know, when you realize how recent that the civil rights movement and the apex of the civil rights movement and Stonewall were happening at almost the exact same time, that like my lifespan is practically the length from the heel being thrown at Stonewall.
And I'll say
so
what keeps not getting talked about is the queer involvement in the planning of that march.
Well,
whether it's
Bayard
Rustin or James Baldwin's involvement, and how he was basically asked to stop participating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even by Dr. King, because he knew that it needed to be effective. Mm-hmm. You know, and James Baldwin had enough sense of history to understand, but we were asked to check ourselves out of it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting.
And we were there,
and
we're the
there.
Reason, and we were part of the reason that it happened. I mean, definitely.
Remember, Malcolm X
gathering
was not
on the mall.
Malcolm X was not a completely straight man, so he and his part of the story as far as civil rights go and queer identity is a very under discussed topic as well. Mm. We were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think these are all really tied together. And then what, I guess my point of that is that we think of the civil rights movement, how many years, and yet it's still been a very short amount of time. You know, we look at the gay rights movement, if we go from 1969 to now, very short amount of time. And now the trans movement, which, you know, we'd love to say was really lumped into because it was drag queens at Stonewall. However, the trans movement is really, I think, just kind of gotten some legs in the past decade. And now with something like Transparent happening, it's happening even faster.
Yeah.
And it does make me think that progress is becoming more economized. And it may also mean it becomes more violent and more caustic and a lot more.
Well, we're in the information age, so it also information is disseminated faster.
Yes.
Do you know?
Everything feels accelerated.
Stonewall happened and most of the country didn't even know it.
Right.
There's no way that there's going to be 5 days of rioting in a major city in America and the world not know about it almost instantly.
Right.
I mean, So that's part of it too, is that the movements are accelerated because information is disseminated faster.
But what is the what are going to be the repercussions and the advancements of that? And so some of that I'm interested in talking about.
School board president not allowing kids to go see Selma in Mississippi. Did you hear about that?
I didn't. Let's talk about it.
Not during school hours.
Oh, there you go. Not during school. They were supposed to go during school hours to see it? Oh, interesting.
And he didn't let them.
Interesting. Well, so I just think we're going to see a lot of pushback. And I think when my friends and people start feeling very down about that, I think we just need to kind of be aware that that's going to happen. You know, this resistance to change may get a lot louder, you know, quickly because people get nervous and it's reactive.
Televised, and it will be Twitterized.
Yeah.
And it will be Instagrammed.
That's right.
And it will be Snapchatted.
That's right. So, I mean, this is the new world in which we live. So, anyhow, I want to talk about some of those things because the big news from the Supreme Court and I want to talk about, you know, the civil rights movement in general. So, we'll tell you what's going on in the news and in the theater and the Mitchell Fame back with me here on the couch.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. In Cincinnati, Ohio, the city's first openly gay councilman is offering his support to youth who are struggling with being LGBT. Chris Seelbach has been speaking out following the apparent suicide of 17-year-old transgender girl Leela Alcorn in Southwest Ohio.
A Metro Atlanta family composed of two gay black dads and their kids are the new face of a Nikon commercial. Nikon chose the family to be a part of its I Am Generation Image campaign.
The National Republican Party voted to censure Dave Agema, a committeeman from Michigan. Agema has come under fire for saying blacks cannot reason or control their impulses, calling Muslims camel jockeys, and saying filthy homosexuals want free medical care because they're dying of AIDS.
In Colorado, a Lakewood minister refused to hold a memorial service at New Hope Ministries for a mother of two at his church because the woman was a lesbian. Vanessa Collier was 33 when she died, leaving behind her wife and children. On January 13th, a Dignity in Death rally was held for her.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, the local Roman Catholic diocese is in hot water for firing a gay teacher after he announced he would marry his partner later this year. Lonnie Billiard, 68, a retired drama and English teacher at Charlotte Catholic High School, was told he would no longer be employed as a long-term substitute teacher. He had worked for 15 years as a full-time teacher at Charlotte Catholic, retiring in 2012 and substituting ever since.
Despite a Kentucky law that bars the recognition of gay marriages performed where they are legal, a Jefferson family court judge has granted the state's first same-sex divorce. In the first ruling of its kind in Kentucky, Judge Joseph O'Reilly permitted the divorce of two Louisville women who were legally married in Massachusetts. Although state law says gay marriages performed elsewhere are void in Kentucky, O'Reilly said that barring same-sex couples to divorce here violates the state constitutional guarantee that all people should be treated as equals.
The Transgender Law Center called for the release of Nicole Hernandez Polanco, a Guatemalan trans woman currently being held by Immigration and Customs Enforcement in an all-male detention facility in Florence, Arizona. Hernandez Polanco came to the United States in October seeking asylum because of constant violent attacks, harassment, sexual abuse, and discrimination in her home country and in Mexico.
Equality Illinois launched an initiative to promote passage of a bill banning anti-gay conversion therapy in Illinois. The legislation, House Bill 217, or the Conversion Therapy Prohibition Act, prohibits mental health care providers from engaging in sexual orientation change efforts with patients under the age of 18. It also says that providers engaging in such conduct will be subject to discipline by their licensing agency.
In world news, Vietnam's government repealed a nationwide ban on same-sex marriage, but there's a catch. Marriage equality isn't yet recognized either. Lawmakers initially planned to give full recognition to same-sex marriage, but decided instead to simply repeal the country's ban on gay marriage as an interim step, saying Vietnam needed more time to accept the change. This leaves same-sex couples in an odd position where they technically can marry without government interference, but they do not gain access to the legal rights of marriage.
Thailand's new constitution will include references to a third gender for the first time. The nation joins other Asian countries, including India and Nepal, who have legally recognized third genders.
Leo Varadkar, a senior cabinet minister in Ireland, has come out as gay. He is Ireland's first openly gay high-level government official.
In Australia, the New South Wales Parliament's first openly gay MP, Paul O'Grady, has died at 54 of cancer.
Fernando Arias Amparo and Victor Aguirre Espinosa exchanged vows, ending nearly 2 years of legal wrangling to become the first gay couple to marry in Baja California, Mexico.
Austria's constitutional court has ruled that gay couples have the same right as heterosexuals to adopt children. Before the decision, same-sex partners could adopt a child only if one of them was the child's biological parent. Gay people still cannot marry in Austria, although couples formally registered as living together enjoy many of the rights that married heterosexual couples do.
The Australian Capital Territory has moved to expunge historic convictions of homosexuality. Consensual sex between men was a crime until 1976. The move follows similar moves by South Australia, New South Wales, and Victoria.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth II will award a young lesbian for her activism work. Dawna Piggott, a 24-year-old from Barbados, was chosen as one of 60 inspiring people inducted into the inaugural Queen's Young Leaders Program.
In entertainment news, Barbra Streisand will receive the American Society of Cinematographers 2015 Board of Governors Award. The ASC Board of Governors Award is given to an individual who has made extraordinary achievements in advancing the art and craft of filmmaking. Previous recipients include Harrison Ford, Julia Roberts, Warren Beatty, Morgan Freeman, and Steven Spielberg.
Justin Bieber has been offered $2 million to film a gay porn scene. The adult entertainment site Men.com formally pitched the idea to Bieber in a video starring Johnny Rapid. This seems to all stem from Bieber's recent and mildly controversial Calvin Klein campaign. There have been plenty of accusations that several aspects of the photos were photoshopped.
NBC will develop a slate of two-hour TV movies based on Dolly Parton's songs, stories, and life. Over the past 40 years, the Grammy winner has 41 albums that have reached the top 10 in the country charts, the most for any artist, as well as 25 albums that have either been certified gold, platinum, or multi-platinum. In addition, 110 singles have reached the country charts.
ABC Family has renewed The Fosters for a third season. The Fosters, which is produced in-house, is executive produced by Jennifer Lopez and created by Bradley Bredwig and Peter Page of Queer as Folk. It won a TV Academy honor and a GLAAD Media Award for its depiction of a same-sex family.
Tom Ford may be the next designer for Gucci after it announced that designer Frida Giannini would exit the company. Ford ran Gucci from 1994 through 2004, turning around an unprofitable business that eventually went public. Ford has since launched his own brand, estimated to be worth $1 billion.
Dame Edna's Glorious Goodbye, the farewell tour, just launched in Seattle. Dame Edna is scheduled to play L.A., San Francisco, Palm Desert, Toronto, and D.C. The tour runs through late April.
Glee star Lea Michele will co-star in Scream Queens, the follow-up Fox series from the creators of Glee. Also joining the cast are Joe Manganiello of True Blood fame, Abigail Breslin, and singer Ariana Grande. The new anthology series, which also stars Jamie Lee Curtis and Emma Roberts, revolves around a college campus that is rocked by a series of murders.
And Glee introduced a new transgender storyline for Dot Marie Jones' character, Shannon Beast. In an emotional scene, the football coach reveals that she will be transitioning from a woman to a man.
Fox's live adaptation of the Broadway hit Grease will star Julianne Hough as Sandy and Vanessa Hudgens as Rizzo. The network's three-hour live musical will air Sunday, January 31st, 2016.
Michael Sam is engaged to Vito Camisano. Sam got on one knee atop St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City on his 25th birthday. Sam is still waiting to be signed by a pro football team after the St. Louis Rams and Dallas Cowboys cut him.
And Wolf Releasing has acquired the rights to two award-winning coming-of-age films, Boy Meets Girl and Tiger Orange. Boy Meets Girl will release across all VOD platforms beginning April 7th and on DVD April 28th. Wolf has also worldwide rights for Tiger Orange, which will debut later in 2015. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, this is Pan Man speaking. Fasten your seatbelts, frequent flyers. You're flying the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 26th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The Broadway smash hit and classic musical comedy La Cage aux Folles comes to the Marriott Theatre in Lincolnshire, January 28th through March 29th. Feathers get ruffled, households upended in a poignant tale of one family's struggle to stay together, stay fabulous, and above all else, stay true to themselves. Visit MarriottTheatre.com for more information or to buy tickets.
A Red Orchid Theater toasts the start of 2015 with the smash hit Accidentally Like a Martyr by Grant James Vargas. Directed by Shade Murray, the flawless ensemble acting is highly recommended by the Sun-Times. And the Tribune says, Accidentally Like a Martyr is a warm and potent show, well worth 80 minutes of your time. Now playing through March 1st, with tickets and more at aredorchidtheater.org.
The Book of Merman is the first great comedy of 2015. Join Pride Films and Plays and see what happens when two Mormons ring the doorbell of one Ethel Merman. Order tickets for the Jeff-nominated Book of Merman at brownpapertickets.com. It's running through February 15th only.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller, post a comment at WindyCityQueercast.com.
The revolution will not be televised. No. You will not be able to stay home, brothers. You will not be able to tune in, turn on, or pop out because the revolution will not be televised. No. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag.
I had the pleasure of seeing, I mean, I feel so excited that at the Golden Globes was not only our good friend Alexander Billings and former Queercast co-host, but also former Queercast co-host Coleman Domingo was representing the movie Selma. He is plays the Reverend, who was one of King's very dear friends, and he's featured throughout the movie and featured throughout the trailer, if you've even seen the trailer for the film.
He's in it, yeah.
Coleman is in it quite a bit. Kind of a pivotal anchor type man, spiritual anchor for King's life. And I had the pleasure of going to see this movie last week. And I just have to say, you know, I saw it right before the nominations came out for the Oscars. And we're going to have an Oscar prediction show here in a couple weeks. And then Mitchell and I, of course, will watch the Oscars and talk about the high holidays.
Yes, we will.
I thought it was truly one of, and I know you haven't seen it yet, have you?
I have not.
It is one of the most gorgeous movies. And I don't want to talk it up too much in a specific way, but what I will say is that I was so impressed with, Coleman has been in kind of what I call these great African-American films lately. I mean, and I include Lincoln in that batch because of, you know, he was one of the black soldiers in Lincoln, and then he did The Butler. And now he's in Selma. And I just think that this film, in kind of the epic way that Lincoln was a film, and The Butler, kind of this very expansive view, right, of kind of like civil rights history through lots of different scenarios, through the aging of this butler in the White House. This movie, to me, was so intimate and so personal and such beautiful filmmaking from Ava DuVernay. I just am really shocked that she was not nominated and that David Oyelowo was not nominated as well.
Except the Academy is made up of old white guys.
It's made up of old white guys. And so old, we have to think it's probably, you know, some sort of inherent racism, even though they gave 12 Years a Slave the accolades the year before. And
exactly.
We had
so they were like,
oh,
I can't watch another movie about it.
But here's the thing. I read this really interesting article and I thought, isn't this interesting? And I'm curious, you know, what we would think of this through the eyes of LGBT people based on our conversation before the news. I read this really interesting article either in Forbes or the New York Times or somewhere that said, we're perfectly fine watching the black experience through slavery and through, oppression. But we're not okay seeing the black experience when it's about empowerment and when it's about strength and perseverance in that way. And I thought, well, that is really, really interesting. If we go back, we look at roots, we look at, you know, we can look at a million different stories. He's a butler.
With very few exceptions, any film that has been praised by the mainstream / the Academy
for LGBT,
the lead character dies.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Like, we have Philadelphia. We even have, like, the Normal Heart with the
Harvey
Golden Globes.
We
have Harvey Milk. These martyred...
Martyred, longtime companion. Kiss the Spider Woman.
I mean, The Kids Are All Right is a gay film that's
Boys
not.
Don't Cry.
I mean, but
right,
for men.
Very
but that's a
exception.
Female experience.
Right, but as I'm saying, I mean, there are exceptions.
But
very
angry gay men, you know, is not the story.
Or empowered, super happy.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the love story that got ignored this year, The Love is Strange, which not enough people have seen. I don't even think queer people have seen it. Love is Strange is one of the best films of the year.
Yeah, I have not seen it.
With the best performances I've seen, and I'm an actor, so I admit that this is my pretentious opinion. You are not going to see Eddie Redmayne, David Oyelowo, all included, you are not going to see better acting than Alfred Molina
and
John Lithgow as a gay couple. And it's not because I'm queer, it's because I'm an actor.
No, I've actually heard that, and I wanted to see that movie, and I didn't get to see it because of
but
the time that it came out.
But to see two gay men who are in love,
where
their love is not even a question.
Yep. I mean, I do think that this has to be the thing, right? I mean, you're really hitting it too, and that you took the conversation exactly where I was saying of, like, you know, what, because, you know, you could say, oh, well, yeah, but Martin Luther King, you know, is assassinated, so he was a martyr too, in the same way we could say that the guy who died of AIDS is, you know, in Philadelphia, or Harvey Milk's character.
But he was so empowered.
But here's the thing, the film is not about King. The film is so definitely about the people.
The march.
It's so about, like, all these people, and some of them are not even black, you know, but it's so definitely about people, you know, rising up and wanting change and believing in something and standing behind something. And yes, he was, the film is tethered to him and
of course
happens because of him. And we see it through his eyes, but we see this,
not called Martin Luther King, it's called Selma.
No, yeah, exactly. And we see the struggle between, even within the civil rights movement, even within King's party, even within, the people that King brings to Selma and the people who are actually university students in Selma who don't agree. So it's really, really interesting.
Well, you know what I found interesting?
That it's not a singular voice, you know, this film. It's not like one voice like Lincoln was or something like that. It is so diverse, and I think that's maybe scarier.
I think it is.
It only took one person to kind of, and a very extraordinary person. I'm not downplaying Martin Luther King at all, but you know, it took a person to ignite a group of people to be that powerful, you know?
I find it very interesting that this weekend, I can't speak to the film because I didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to see it because I know you will.
And
I know you've been kind of anti-oppression movies right now, but it's absolutely
also
doesn't
I was
feel,
sort of sick this weekend.
No,
so
I know, but it doesn't feel that way to me. Although very deeply, subtly moving.
I find it interesting that the discussion. There's been a very heated discussion lately, past couple of days between Michael Moore and Seth Rogen about this movie American Sniper.
Mm.
About what a hero this guy is, and because he killed more people than anyone else as a sniper. As it turns out, the guy that it's actually based on...
The Bradley Cooper role?
Yeah. Not the part... Bradley Cooper's playing in the movie a noble person. The person that that's based on,
yeah.
as it turns out, is a terrible racist. And one of his things is like he couldn't wait to kill brown people. Mm. That was his thing. And I find it very interesting that that film
mm-hmm.
made $92 million in its opening weekend, which was the same opening weekend as Selma. And it was very difficult to even give tickets away. A friend of mine went to see Selma on Martin Luther King Day in Tucson, Arizona, and he was the only one in the theater on Martin Luther King Day.
Mm.
And
it
American
is Arizona.
Sniper,
there aren't any black people in Arizona.
Well, that's
Arizona,
my point. So
maybe
the work is not done.
And
the work is not done.
Yeah.
American Sniper made $92 million that weekend. We still think being American
mm-hmm.
isn't about Selma, but it's about killing as many brown people as possible. Unfortunately, that's, in a simplistic reading, that's mm-hmm. what we're still, that's why the struggle is not over.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have the first black president. And then when people say things like, well, you know, we're post-racial because we have the first black president. 92 million people went to see a movie about a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And on Martin Luther King Day, a friend of mine walked in to see Selma by himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the theater was not that crowded when I went to go see it here, but it was an
off day. We still think that being American, is going somewhere and shooting people who aren't Americans.
Yeah.
As opposed to celebrating the bravery of...
The thing that makes us most fundamentally American.
Most fundamentally, most... if you want to talk about American exceptionalism, mm-hmm. it's not that we can shoot guns of people who don't think like us.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we can make change happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the State of the Union address, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no State of the Union address in Yemen.
Right.
You know?
Right.
We get to have a State of the Union address.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Those are the things that are truly American, not shooting people.
Well, and that's why, you know, look, whether, you know, I mean, so many great films and so many great actors have never won an Academy Award, right. possibly you've never even been nominated, you know, but it is when a film like Selma, it would have helped so much if it had gotten, you know, more nominations, and it deserved more nominations.
Sure.
It absolutely.
Although I have to say, it might have a backlash effect, which is the discussion about it that's going to be constant until the awards
mm-hmm.
and present during the awards
mm-hmm.
Because it was in fact nominated for Best Picture, but the director was not, which harkens back to Streisand.
Which is crazy.
Because they didn't want to acknowledge this woman for being directing.
Well,
and
this is the
and,
point. Yeah. It's the sexism, too. I mean, it's
sure.
the racism. It's more the sexism. Honestly, I think that the sexism is probably greater than the racism.
It might be.
I totally think it is.
I just think a lot of these Alta Kakas, which is what I called Billy Crystal on Facebook today for the goyim among you, an Alta Kaka is an old shitty person. I think it's the Alta Kakas in the Academy who are like, we've seen one of them movies about that.
So what's going on with Billy Crystal? What did he do last week?
He released a statement saying that he's sort of sick of he thinks it's going too far with the way that gay people are being represented on TV. It's going too far with the gay lives, like the sex. It's too much. He's been silent while Whitney Houston gets humped by Bobby Brown. He's been silent while every soap opera is so graphic. He's been humped. God forbid. I mean, I will read you exactly. I'll read you exactly what I wrote on Facebook today.
Okay.
It's short. Are you ready?
Yeah.
This is what I wrote on Facebook. And it's akin to what we're talking about because he's one of the Alta Kakas in the Academy. He's an old straight guy who doesn't get it.
Yeah.
I wrote, oh, for Christ's sakes, shut up, Billy Crystal. Seriously, never liked you. Just shut up. And this is in quotes. This is what he said. Sometimes it's just pushing it a little too far for my taste, and I'm not going to reveal to you which ones they are. End quote. Crystal further explained, quote, I hope people don't abuse it and shove it in our face to the point where it feels like an everyday kind of thing. End quote. He was discussing gay scenes. And then I wrote, shove it in our face? Everyday kind of thing, our face, it is actually an everyday kind of thing for lots and lots of people, you shriveled Alta Kaka. Of course, he speaks from a point of authority and moral high ground for playing a character 40 years ago who was a running punchline of fag and cross-dressing and tranny jokes. Just shut up.
What was he interviewed about? Why would he have even been interviewed about
Who
this?
Who knows? He just was going off about stuff because he thinks the world's getting crazy. And yeah, I played a gay guy, but my gay guy got made fun of. That's what it's supposed to be. We don't want to see him feeling empowered and having sex. It's like, just shut up, Billy Crystal.
But we don't know if he was referring to transparent or looking or...
Who knows? Point is, shut up. My point is that you're old and you have your point is invalid. And he's... What do you mean, shoved in our faces? You mean my face? I don't feel shoved.
Yeah.
You mean our faces. You mean straight people. And push it too far for who? Who's calling it too far?
Yeah.
Compared to what? Compared to every TV commercial? I saw an ad for ear cuffs, like earrings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a full picture of a very young, very svelte, very skinny model wearing almost no clothes. There was absolutely no way to see her ears. And I mean, if he wants to make a point about that we've become too permissive as a culture, that's a different discussion.
That's right.
I also would call him an alt caca.
Right.
But that's a different discussion.
Right.
But it's akin because he's one of the kinds of people who are voting at the Academy.
Yeah.
He's one of the kinds of people who would not see John Lithgow's performance and understand that it's groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And recognize it. Or Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance in Mysterious Skin 10 years ago and see that it's groundbreaking. They just don't see it.
Yeah.
They don't see Selma and think it's important.
Yeah.
They don't see it. And I want Billy Crystal, A, to shut up, and B, I would like to go on record saying I've never liked him. Never liked him. And one of the reasons why When Harry Met Sally, A, is, first of all, it's ersatz Woody Allen. Secondly, it never worked for me because who in their right mind would fuck Billy Crystal? Especially not someone as cute as Meg Ryan. So that movie was always a lie. Mm-hmm. I just have never found him funny. And then a friend of mine posted this unbelievably embarrassing, cringeworthy performance he gave at a comic relief benefit after Katrina, where he does an entire like 18-minute solo monologue where he's playing a jazz man, which I'm doing air quotes because you know what jazz man means?
Mm-mm.
It means a black person.
Oh.
It is one of the most cringeworthy, racist, horrible things I've ever heard. And he just thinks, oh, he can get away with it because he's a soulful old Jewish guy. Fuck you, Billy Crystal.
I had no clue. I'm so glad you posted that because I didn't even know anything about it. I was like, I have to ask Mitchell.
Can I say it again? Sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Matheny. Fuck you, Billy Crystal. I always have to apologize when I use bad language.
I know. it's been a banner week, and as we wrap this up, just to say that I know I mentioned in the last show, and of course you'd have to be kind of hiding under a log because it's made so much mainstream news the past 10 days about the Supreme Court will hear the cases from the Sixth District, Sixth Circuit, which is, and I've said this and you were here, that Tennessee will take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And I was right because it is that district that starts in Michigan, goes right down to Ohio, Kentucky to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Center,
I said it because you were here, which is the same states that that were opposed the ending of slavery, opposed interracial marriage, and also opposed immigration rights. That whole grouping.
Yeah. Well, interesting. There's more, too. I've been kind of, surprised.
But
that,
yes,
you know,
that's the
Mississippi,
core.
Alabama, Georgia, Florida. I mean, the fact that some other places have already either fallen
it's the
or...
the same map.
Right. So it's this little line. It's the center of the center of the center of the United States. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's kind of the center of the center of the center. And that's what's going to take it, all the way to the Supreme Court. They will hear the case in April. They are hearing two different points. One... basically, this is my language, is it unconstitutional? Should same-sex couples
is
be allowed to marry?
Right.
Basic right, for all states. And number two, if you say no, then is it, do you lawfully have to recognize a legal same-sex marriage in another state? So if they answer yes to one, they don't need to ask two.
If they answer no to one,
we have to go to two to see if, like, your marriage in Rhode Island or New York is legal in Tennessee.
Yeah.
This will be heard, and the answer will come out in June, and so it'll be right in time for gay pride.
The American Family Association, whatever that group is,
mm-hmm.
has asked, that horrible hate group, demanded that Kagan and Ginsburg recuse themselves. Have you read this?
No.
happened today because they've officiated at gay weddings.
Oh, how funny.
Oh, I don't know if it's funny. They actually might have a case. And if that happens, we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that somebody would have to recuse themselves for performing a marriage that actually is legal within a state.
Well, but it shows a bias towards one side or the other.
I don't know that it does, because somebody is performing a legal act in a legal state. That doesn't show a bias in that state. Just because they think it should be legal for that state doesn't mean that they think it should be legal on national level. I don't know how you would I know how you would twist that up to debate that, but that is has no constitutionality that they couldn't perform.
I think you're wrong. I think that it does. I think that's going to have to be discussed before this all happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
They can refuse to recuse themselves.
Well, they can refuse to recuse themselves, but I also think that, you know, why wouldn't you do something legal that was legal in a state? You know?
Sure, but there, I think there is some grounds for them sort of asking for them to recuse themselves.
Yeah, well, there are going to be grounds for them to ask a lot of things. They're going to have to hear a lot of people talk.
I'm very going to be very grounds in their face.
Cute. It could be very, very interesting to see. But
I think you said cute. It's going to be cute to see.
No, it's going to be.
It's going to be cute, cute, cute.
It's not going to be cute, cute, cute. It's going to be interesting to see who they allow to speak for it and against it, who will be asked to.
I hope they let Mike Huckabee speak. He made Jenny. Did you see that? Him? Did you see him get his get ripped a new one on Jon Stewart?
No.
Everybody, please, please, YouTube, Jon Stewart ripping Mike Huckabee in the most polite, respectful Jon Stewart way, ripping Huckabee a new one about cultural values and his prejudice and his sense of privilege and the idea of those states, those flyover states that everyone thinks are somehow better, right? Because they're like, they're real Americans. Why are they more real than New Yorkers or Californians?
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
I mean, and in fact,
I don't think they are, because I come from them. So.
And also, like, I mean, there's one point where he uses the word Harvard professors, and he uses the word Harvard professors in such a pejorative way. And
Stewart does?
No, Huckabee does. And Jon Stewart said, I think it's outrageous that you use Harvard as a negative. We're talking about Harvard University, and you spin it, so that's a bad thing.
Right.
To be Harvard educated, that's a bad thing, so that you can continue to believe that real people, better people, live in uneducated places.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable. I beg you all to go on YouTube.
I'm going to watch it right now.
It's amazing.
I'm going to watch it right now. Well, I think we're going to see a lot of discourse. I think we're going to hear a lot of push. And the good news is folks, just don't be silent, you know? Don't be silent. And
scream and yell. Tell this Billy Crystal to shut the fuck up.
This is a time to be loud. This is the time to... you know, not rest on our laurels of thinking like, hey, we live in Illinois, we have marriage. You know, this is a time to actually start donating to these organizations. This is a time to rally.
Is it possible to not rest on my laurels, but also rest on your comfy couch?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Let's just do that.
I'd like to do both.
So while you guys are all out there championing and being activists and activating yourselves, we're gonna rest on our laurels on the couch.
Yeah.
Because we just did this podcast.
My laurels are tired.
We just did this podcast.
I got some old ass laurels.
Exactly. Have a great week, everyone. Upcoming shows, we're going to have our Oscar predictions, if I can make any. I'm a little sad, but we can make our Oscar predictions. I'm going to try to finish seeing a couple of these movies. And in upcoming weeks, we are going to talk about marriage more. I don't know. So much more. But I hope you have a good week, everyone. And if you have not watched Transparent, become an Amazon Prime member. Look,
you can binge watch it.
You can binge watch it.
Get it for like a month.
Well, you can get it for like a month. You can binge watch it quickly. Or I love Amazon Prime. I just got to tell you, if you're ordering anything through Amazon and it's free shipping and it's brilliant for like $90 a year when you think, you know, you can get a little family rate too. So you can like order with your family. So it's a groovy, cool thing. Plus you get to watch great television.
Yeah.
So anyway, have a great week, everyone. And we're going to rest on our laurels while we fight for gay rights.
Yes, we do.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.